Fast Eddie on the grounds here right next to EAA Radio, where I'm sitting under the wing of a very unique aircraft. It's called a Gooey Duck, and I'm going to talk to Marty and Ben Ellison. They are brothers, and they are the designers, builders, owners, and they're also the people that sweep the shop out at night. Hi, guys. How's it going?
Pretty good.
Okay, so you've got yourself a Gooey Duck here. Why is it that it looks so much like a Grumman product?
Well, I grew up having bad dreams about Grumman widgeons. You know, as a teenage boy, you probably had dreams that your mother wished you didn't have.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I didn't have those dreams. I dreamed about widgeons.
About widgeons?
Grumman widgeons, a beautiful seaplane that landed on its belly. And all my life, I wanted one. When I got older and I thought I could afford one, I found out that you put them in salt water and they just dissolve.
Exactly, aluminum aircraft.
Yeah, so I thought, well, somebody ought to build one of these things out of fiberglass or something that won't disappear after a while in salt water. So we started this out. I started with a clean sheet of paper about 19 years ago, intending to build a copy of a widgeon. But in researching the old airplane, I learned that there were a lot of skeletons in its closet. So it seemed obvious that they should be fixed, and that resulted in a whole new ground-up design. And that's what this is, brand new. Nothing about it that's common with a widgeon or any Grumman product, except for its overall configuration.
Yeah, the appearance, it does remind you very much of the Grumman amphibs. We have several albatrosses here, but they're aluminum. And like you said, you put aluminum in salt water and it just goes away.
Eventually it does, yes.
So what did it take to design this aircraft?
Well, I'm an engineer by education. And I worked in engineering for a good part of my life. And there's an incredible amount of technical information that's available for anybody that wants to do any design work, aircraft design. So it was a pretty easy task to put together my own training and education with the wonderful resources of data that are available. Most of the seaplane data was generated by research supported by the U.S. Navy in the 30s and 40s. And it's published in the form of NACA reports, all of which are available. And it was a fascinating study, a fascinating project. Most of the fun in the thing was doing the design work.
Well, you know, that's something that just completely overwhelms me, the fact that you can take an idea and you can go and turn it into a viable aircraft. I have no idea what it takes to design an airplane, so walk me through it. Where do you start when you design a brand new airplane?
Well, I started with a basic mission profile. I wanted it to carry six people. And I know what six people weigh. I know how much luggage my wife carries along. So I figure there are three couples, two wives, or rather three wives. Each of those is going to carry 100 pounds of luggage.
At least.
So that's 300 pounds of cargo. And I want to go 400 miles. I know how much fuel it takes because I know what size engines it takes to carry that much stuff. So now I know the weight of the flesh inside. I know the cargo. I know the weight of the fuel. I know the weight of the engines. And that pretty much defines the wingspan, the wing area, and it just all falls apart so easily from all those beginning numbers.
Key word there, fall apart. That's the one thing you don't want to have happen to the airplane. And here's the part that I find interesting. This aircraft is all composite. This thing is beautiful, so you had to build molds for it.
We did. We started by building a foam duplicate of the hull. Foam and plaster and chicken wire and anything that we needed in order to create the shape we wanted. Then we finished it nice and smoothly so it would shine. Beautiful finish. And then we piled fiberglass over that to form the molds. It's molded in a left and a right half. And the bottom from the step forward is a third half, is a third part. So it's a left and a right half and a bottom. And
So you're telling me that when you put the fuselage together, it's like building a big plastic model.
Exactly.
Oh, that's great.
If you were to stand back 50 yards away and take a picture of the parts, it would look like they're coming right out of a Mattel model kit.
Oh, geez. That's incredible. You know, of course, there's a lot of substructures and everything that go into that. You had to build molds for those too, right?
No. Well, we were able to generate profiles of those from the AutoCAD drawings that were used to generate the hull. So it was really easy to print out profiles of all of the frame stations that go inside. And they were just cut out of flat sheets of foam and fiberglass composite. And the advantage in the airplane is that the airplane was so large you can get inside to work on it.
Yeah.
So you glue the left half to the right half. The one half still in the mold, you lower the other half on top of it, crawl inside with the frames and a six-pack of beer.
And only one?
And begin using fiberglass tape to fasten the frames in.
The one part, and this is probably one of the most critical parts of the airplane, is the wing spar. How did you guys come up with the design and actually build the spar for this wing?
Well, the spar is a very simple component. It's a pair of C-sections that are bolted together. And if you imagine a square-shaped letter C, the top and the bottom legs are carbon, and the vertical leg connecting the top and bottom legs are just fiberglass shear web. So you've got two C's, and then they're bolted together to make an I-beam. And
Okay, you're talking back-to-back now.
Back-to-back,
back-to-back,
right.
Okay.
So you've got a C looking to the right and a C looking to the left, and they're bolted together at their back, and it creates an I-beam, and it runs the full length of the wing. It tapers in height as you get out further towards the wingtip. The bending moment goes down.
Right.
So they get a little smaller and a little lighter as you go outward.
Well, here's a question. I have seen them do destruction testing of various aircraft components. I saw video of an Airbus wing being tested to destruction. Did you do that with your first spar?
No. We live in an area where there's a lot of aircraft design and fabrication resources around. The Boeing company is near us. And they have a surplus place where they dispose of equipment. We were able to buy a tensile test machine from the Boeing surplus yard. Well, actually, we didn't buy it. I talked somebody else into buying it and storing it at my place.
That works.
That works. And incidentally, I still have it. He's forgotten that he owns it.
Oops.
So
he'll know now if he's listening, though.
We tested many, many samples of the materials. We laid up the spar, and we didn't have the equipment to load the thing to failure, and we didn't have the money to destroy it because it was very expensive to build. We did instrument it and load it with sandbags after it was built. We loaded it up to one and a half Gs, which is 50% more than the weight that it carries in normal flight, and using strain gauges, measured the deflection to be sure that the deflection followed the calculations, what the calculations said the deflection should be. So we're kind of hanging our hat on that as being an indication that...
T-28 going out there.
As being an indication that it's strong enough. And we've loaded it in flight up to that level. And we'll continue to test it, and we'll load it more and more. We were able to do good testing on the horizontal tail where we use airbags, and we were able to load the tail surfaces up to limit load, and they did just fine. So I think that answers your question.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other thing to take into consideration too is that not only does the spar take the majority of the weight, but the skin will also take a fair amount of it too, because the skin's got to be bonded to the spars, right?
The skin carries about 30% of the load.
There you go.
Yeah.
So
and each of the two C-sections in the spar is designed to carry the load.
Okay, so you're well overbuilt here.
That's why it's so heavy.
We didn't know that. Well, you know, building an amphibious airplane, it's got to be heavy anyway, because it's got to take the stress of the water, of the water landings.
Yeah.
That can really tear an airplane apart. So you've got two things that favor composites. You know, they don't go away in salt water, and they can take a pretty good banging.
That's true. The water loads are a little bit spooky when you... It's hard to calculate all the water loads.
How many hours total time you have on this airplane?
Well, we've only got 50 hours on it, Ed.
So you've just barely flown off the 40 hours.
You don't want to get too close because the paint's wet.
It's a pretty paint job, too. For those of you who haven't seen it, it is by EAA Radio, and it shines better than most show cars do. You guys really did a lot of sanding on those molds and a lot of sanding on this airplane to get it to this consistency.
Yeah, I'm sorry to say the paint job, a good Oshkosh paint job is heavy.
It is.
And this paint job weighs 130 pounds.
That's a lot of paint.
It is. It's a lot of blood and sweat. Blood and sweat, too.
Well, I noticed it has several features that were incorporated into the Grumman airplanes. For one thing, the floats that also turn into wingtips as well. You figured if it was good enough for Grumman, it was good enough for you guys?
Well, Grumman didn't have that.
That's right, the PBY Catalina did. My bad.
The Grumman aircraft, the Grumman Widget and Goose, were retrofitted with retractable floats years after they were produced. And they're important in a boat-type airplane because they're so difficult to get up to a dock otherwise.
Right.
So we can retract one float. And of course, when you retract that float, you want to be sure that the other float stays on the water. So we deal with that issue by fabricating a water ballast tank in the outboard tip of the other wing, and we pump it full of water, and that makes that wing heavy enough to stay on the water.
Yeah, it keeps you from dunking the other wing.
Right, and the passengers as they get out.
Yeah, that would be very bad too. Yeah, well, you know, thing of it being is, in a situation like that, if you were to dip the wing hard enough, you could literally sink the airplane.
Yeah.
That would not be a good start to your day.
Not a happy day.
Not a happy day at all. Now, are you offering this as a fully built airplane, or is this coming as a kit plane?
Well, we're here to find out what the interest is in it. We would love to offer kits. As we were building the airplane, we built hard tooling. So all of the real difficult work of kit preparation is done. There are a lot of things that we learned in putting this airplane together that we will make use of those lessons to make a kit much more user-friendly than this particular one was.
Okay, so you're going to start out with this model, which is the A model, and if you put a kit plane out, it's going to be the B version of it.
It's going to be the... That's right. It's going to be the B version, and it'll be a lot lighter as well, Ed.
Oh, I'm sure, because the first, you know, the prototype has always got all kinds of over-engineering, and you realize that as you go through the process that there are corners that, well, not corners, but there are things you can do to beef the structure and maintain, you know, get some of that lead out of the aircraft.
Ed, everything you see is a collection of mistakes.
I wouldn't go that far.
It is. The tail is 50% heavier than it should be.
Really?
I built the tail with an aerodynamic balance weight, a balanced surface out on the end. You look at all of the Cessnas and the Pipers, and they have a forward extending surface at the tip of the elevator that goes down as the elevator goes up to create an aerodynamic balance.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. Everybody does that. So I put this on here.
Right.
And it was much later, when the airplane was almost ready to fly, I was reviewing our model test data. Our model experiments is another story. But we had built a quarter-scale model. I began reviewing the videos, and I found there were certain water conditions that would allow that aerodynamic balance on the horizontal tail to dig into the wave.
Ooh.
So, Ed, we had to cut it apart and glue that part onto the horizontal tail and make the elevator hinge line extend straight out. And that caused an increase in the weight because we had to put extra structure in.
Right.
So everything in the airplane we've done a couple of times over, and there's more stuff that won't have to be in the next one.
Well, I'm pretty sure that as you went through the production process, you had a pad of paper around and you made a list of detailed notes of things that you would change on the next aircraft.
And it's as thick as a phone book.
I'm sure it is. Well, you know, here it is. This is you've turned an idea into a real airplane, and this was your first try. And the first try, you know, there's always a few rough edges here and there. But I'll bet you dollars to donuts you're going to build another one.
Well, we're sure hoping for that.
All right, well, let me ask you this. Are you thinking about putting turbines in the next version?
Well, Ed, we are very close to a company that makes a version of the Allison engine that would allow us to have opposite rotation propellers if we wanted to put a turbine engine in this airplane, pair of turbine engines. And there's a lot of powerful reasons for doing that, but you can't pass a gas station. The fuel consumption is very high.
Yeah, it is, but the other side of the coin is that, too, you know, the fuel is a little bit cheaper, a lot more available, and you got more horsepower.
Oh, you'd have 500 horsepower compared to 300 per side.
Exactly.
Very attractive option.
Very effective.
Okay, well, the other thing that...
Let me ask you this. How much did the design change as the composite technologies and manufacturing techniques advanced over the years?
There are many composite technologies that are being used now that we chose not to use. They would have made it lighter. But, for example, carbon has a corrosion problem like aluminum does.
Ooh.
The other problem is that it needs to be repairable. If this thing is flying up and down the coast, the West Coast, which is where we intend to use it, you need to be able to repair it if you hit a log, hit a rock. And we wanted to be able to go to any boat place that sells boat supplies and get a yard of fiberglass cloth and resin and be able to patch it so we can get home. And for that reason, we stayed to Stone Age fiberglass material that's been in the boating industry for 30 years.
Well, everybody can
work
with fiberglass. It doesn't require any special techniques.
Anybody can do it, yeah.
Carbon fiber, on the other hand, you got to be a little careful with that stuff. There are hazards involved with that.
It requires, to get the maximum benefit out of that, you need an autoclave, and that's pretty hard to do with a 50-foot long wing.
Beechcraft and their autoclave for the Starship. They discovered that their engineering was a little on the heavy side with that airplane, too.
Yeah.
Very pretty airplane, but aerodynamically, it was not what they wanted.
Yeah.
It was not what they were shooting for. Has this met your goals so far in performance?
Well, I think so. We only have 50 hours on it.
So you really haven't gotten through all the testing on it yet?
And we've got another year of testing.
Another year?
Another year of testing, yeah.
Well, guys, I'll tell you what you do. When you get done with that year of testing, give us a call. We'd like to talk to you, see how well this thing has progressed.
Okay.
One other question that I have. Why the left-hand engine?
Typically a conventionally turning engine located on both right and left positions causes a seaplane to make an uncommanded left turn if you apply full power to get it for takeoff.
Okay.
An uncommanded left turn. And that can be real challenging when you've got tricky currents and tricky winds. So we use an opposite rotation propeller on the right-hand side, and that cancels out the torque from the two engines. And the airplane, when you hit the throttles, it leaps straight ahead just like a train on rails. And it's very, very benign and user-friendly in that regard.
Well, that's good. Well, you know, and of course, being a multi-engine airplane, were you ever concerned about a critical engine?
No. Neither of the engines is more critical than the other.
Okay. Well, that's good, too.
Yeah, it is. It's very, very helpful in a pilot responding to a dead engine.
Well, the other thing I noticed is taking a look inside here, it's got a pretty good-sized cockpit in it. You got some room to move around in there.
Well, I'm told the cockpit's a size... equivalent to the size of a DC-3 cockpit.
Well, there you go.
Never been in one, but I don't know.
Well, I've been in a couple of DC-3s. Yeah, it's pretty roomy up there, and I've been in some of the modern aircraft, the TBM-700. And let me tell you, you need a shoehorn to get in and a crowbar to get out of it. Yeah. But, you know, once you get in there, it's very comfortable. This thing, you just walk down the aisle, wave to the passengers, hi, we're going to go fly now, see ya. you know, it appears that you have a little bit of swinging room up there.
Yeah. It's way, way more roomy than its Grumman look-alike.
Well, that's neat. I love the story of this airplane. Perhaps one of these days you'll get to fly this thing here out at AirVenture. But seriously, guys, we'd like to hear from you next year here at EAA Radio to find out how well you're doing. Of course, it would be even nicer if you'd come back with the airplane and tell us all of your great war stories and everything about this. And, of course, we here at EAA wish you the best of luck with this aircraft.
And, well, thank you, Ed. This has been great fun.
Yeah, we've had a good time.
Yeah, if you get out to the Northwest, you need to drop by. We'll treat you to a gooey duck feed.
Wait a minute. You're going to feed me an airplane?
I'm going to feed you a gooey duck.
I've seen those things. They're gross.
They're tasty.
They're disgusting.
All God's critters are wonderful, right next to the mashed potatoes.
Yeah, you got that right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking to Ben Ellison and his silent partner, his brother Marty here. We're located right next to EAA Radio. Come on down here and take a look at the newest thing in gooey ducks, and I do mean the aircraft, not the delicacy. Somebody's generating a lot of horsepower out there. And while they're doing that, I'm Fast Eddie, and you're listening to EAA Radio.